But first of all, I want to draw your attention to an extraordinary theatrical event. And I've managed to persuade B. Campbell to drop into the program to be our theatre critic. I don't know if you saw it. I rushed home from the studio last night and to look at opening night. I didn't think much of the set. I thought the lighting was crook. And the performances, although, of course, we had a number of megastars there, the performances, I thought, were pretty average. I was a bit shocked by the slapstick of a cream pie in the middle of the drama. But Shakespeare often mixes things up in the same way. But I think the problem really laid with the script. B. Campbell, journalist, author, social commentator and playwright, joins us to review this grand event. What did you think, B?
I thought that Johnny Marbles' custard pie, well, it's being called a custard pie, I'm inclined to call it a humble pie, that he tried to squash into the face of Rupert Murdoch.
What, to make him even more humble?
No, to make him even more humble. He having announced, despite the fact that the MPs listening to him weren't yet ready to hear this, that this was the most humble day of his life. A phrase, the semantics of which is causing thousands of Brits, as we speak, to wonder, what on earth really does that mean, given that what he then said was that, no, he wasn't really to blame for anything. So he was humbled and pied and unashamed.
An Australian theatre critic, masquerading as a journalist today, found the performance reminiscent of King Lear. Did you have any Shakespearean parallels?
We had Shakespearean parallels, yes, and the son and heir. What was very bizarre about the event was here was a mogul who could not be there, who was then not allowed to do what he wanted to do, which was read his script of one page, while the son and heir had a file worth of, no doubt, absolutely mercilessly lawyered evidence. So we had extraordinary pauses when Rupert Murdoch was asked, did you know this, that, or the other? And we would wait, bated breath.
But the long pause is very much a part of British theatre, you know, from Samuel Beckett, well, not quite British, to Harold
Pinter.
The pause is everything. I like the pauses. I thought they were very... gave me pause.
The pause was very important because it indicated that the man was thinking. Working things out.
I like guests that think. Everyone goes into panic in radio, as you know, if there's a silence, but I love it when a guest creates a silence because you know that some sort of cognitive process is taking place, either that or they've expired.
Well, we witnessed that during this duo giving their performance to the MPs in the House of Commons, something that they're not used to. They're never used, of course, to being held to account. And the only thing that was, shall we say, quietly thrilling in their evidence was the pause. The many pauses. Poor old James was desperate to interrupt those pauses and to blether, which when he was given a chance, he did at great length, masterfully saying in 1,000 words, very little.
How did you feel that the interrogators in the drama performed? Do you think they were up to scratch?
Nobody really could be up to scratch because what everybody is faced with is one of the most powerful news organisations on the planet being obliged to do something that it's constitutionally not, in a sense, capable of doing, which is, dare I say it, telling the truth. Because, you see, one of the things that, well, let me give you a little index of what I mean here. There is a phrase being bandied around at a rate at which I really can't ever remember it being bandied around, and it's this: in hindsight. The British Prime Minister is using it this week, perhaps as we speak. In hindsight. In other words, if I knew then what I now know, I might not have done it. However, it wasn't wrong then. So it's a way of saying, wasn't me, Gov. And that was repeated very forcefully by Murdoch, despite his humility, saying that he felt betrayed and that he didn't feel he should take responsibility for the News of the World hacking. So people's lives and careers have been destroyed here. And humbled though he is, he's not to blame.
I'm sorry, David Cameron, of course, your Prime Minister, has just spoken in Parliament. Was he humble? Did he have pauses?
He wasn't humble. He wasn't pausing. He was careful and scripted. And again, in a very difficult position, one that he's not familiar with, being called to account and being embroiled in something dirty. Now, this is where I think, for the moment, we're going to have to do some very important reflecting on what exactly it is that's at stake here, because the parliamentary processes and the judicial inquiry will yield an inordinate amount of very, very important detail. For the moment, we've got to work out what does this really mean. And I think in the odd little snippets of diamond revelation yesterday, what happened was that something became very clear, and it's this. There is a secret circuit of wiring between the Metropolitan Police, the News of the World, and the Cameron headquarters. Do you know, the Metropolitan Police, we learned yesterday, has one quarter of its press officers, ex-News of the World staffers, indeed very senior staffers. We learned that the Cameron headquarters had a News of the World extra, very senior staffer during the election campaign. You have to wonder why. You have to wonder what it is that the Cameron headquarters needs from News of the World staffers. Well, I can tell you what it is, even though we don't really know what it is. And it's this. If they've got information secured illicitly through the technology of the police and contacts of among the police and payments to the police, knowledge of around about 4,000 people, and we don't even yet know who these people are, was some of that information that was useful to the Conservative Party during the general election? Remember, this is an organisation, News of the World, that has destroyed two Labour leaders, Michael Foot and Neil Kinnock, and is confident in its capacity for destruction, which is as important to the News of the World and the Murdoch Empire as its capacity to influence. So knowledge is power. And this circuitry between the police, the News of the World, and the Cameron HQ, I think, is telling us a story about the embeddedness of these three institutions, but an embeddedness that is constitutionally completely inappropriate.
You know, I've, would you believe, known Rupert for at least 40 years. And I remember when he, in fact, joined in the It's Time chorus to get Gough Whitlam elected. I also remember, I think I remember more recently, that he backed the Beau Blair. Is that not the case?
It is the case. And what the Blair machine decided to do was sup with the Murdoch Empire, do business with them, because, of course, they had in their historical memory the destruction of the previous two. Well, actually, one of them had died, but Neil Kinnock and Michael Foot were destroyed. They knew that they couldn't win without some strategy to address the power of the Murdoch Empire. And so what the Beau Blair did was to secure a relationship between Downing Street that had already been established confidently by Margaret Thatcher and the Murdoch Empire. So something had been set in place, which even now the Labour Party leadership under Ed Miliband was extremely reluctant to let go of. Indeed, its performance, which has really sharpened up in the last 2 weeks, had been somewhat somnolent up until now, and that's because they were terrified.
Okay, I believe there's a diary with 6,000 pages, pretty thick diary. Yes. That's ticking away like a time bomb, is it not?
Yes, it's all ticking away like a time bomb. The diary is ticking away like a time bomb. the papers from Mulcair are ticking away like a time bomb, the conversations that are likely to emerge as the thieves, so to say, fall out. It was already evident yesterday in the House of Commons questionings by two committees, the Culture Committee and the Home Affairs Committee, where we had Assistant Chief Constable John Yates saying, no, not my responsibility, Gov. We had the former Chief of Press from the Metropolitan Police telling us that how important it was they needed all of these News of the World staff. Some questions will no doubt follow about what were these News of the World staff doing at the Met? What were they talking about? Who were they talking to? Why did these staff need to also be Downing Street and the Cameron headquarters? So there's an awful lot of detail that will emerge that I think will be keeping Cameron awake at night.
Okay, so last night was opening night, but you think the theatrical production will run a long, long time?
It will run, and it won't. None of it will be as dramatic as the contribution by Johnny Marbles with the humble pie, but it will be. It will be quiet, and it may well be deadly. There is a sense around. You know, when a Prime Minister has bets being taken in the bookies about how whether or not they're likely to survive, and the bets are something like 3-1, you know that a Prime Minister is in big trouble.
Okay, B, thank you for your time. B Campbell, theatre critic for Late Night Live, reviewing a very interesting production that took place in London but a few hours ago. Late Night Live on ABC Radio National, etc. Coming up, mental health and general practitioners.